Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Kathy Kelly, you are very, very welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm wearing my
very rock chic look that you have, which I'm going to have to probably explain to people, but we're so welcome. We've invited you in with something of an impossible task because we've given you the task of identifying five songs that have soundtracked your life. But
just five. It's very difficult.
Well, as well as being a prolific author, you're actually quite a music obsessive, aren't you?
I love music. I mean, I don't play anything except the radio. But we never learned in our house. And my mom played piano and violin, and my father, I think, played piano. But we didn't have anything. And my sister's attempts to play the recorder were drowned out by people going, "No, stop!" Yeah. But I hear music all the time, and I wake up with a different song in my head every morning.
And you're moving house at the minute, so is that forcing you to kind of go down and revise all of your musical loves?
Well, do you know what? I've just put a load of CDs in a box saying move. But do you know what? Realistically, wherever I'm going is going to be smaller. Is there room for the CDs? And you're going, but I wrote X novels to this one. So we all have, you know, the different streaming platforms for music.
Are you a singer?
I love singing. I won't say, and I once sang Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend on the Ray Darcy television show. So I think there are a lot of people out there who'll say, no, you're definitely not a singer. But I do like to sing. I mean, my brother's in a band, not one that, you know, makes money, obviously, in the UK. And one of my nieces is an amazing bass player and a singer. So there you go.
So there you go. It's definitely in the genes. I have to ask you, when you're writing, are you one of these people that cannot have any music at all? Or do you like, when you're working, do you like having a little bit of music in the background?
No, I always have something in the background. For a long time, I was a film critic a million years ago, and I remember getting part of the merch for one film, Forget Paris, which had Deborah Winger and Billy Crystal. So the merch was this very moody, sort of jazzy soundtrack, a lot of Ella Fitzgerald, and it was called Forget Paris. And I used to play that on a CD player, and for younger members of the audience, that is a big...
These are little round discs.
Little round thing. And... So I used to play that and keep it down low. So even now I can put that on and I'm just back in the writing place.
Helps you get in the zone.
Yeah, but I love gentle jazz, you know, Nina, Ella, you know, fabulous.
We should probably explain your rock chick look because it actually informs your very, very first choice. Who are you wearing?
I am wearing David Bowie. Actually, I'm wearing David Bowie t-shirt, care of one of my children. Murray, whose wardrobe I robbed it out of, because I was going around this morning because I've gone through this cancer, which we have to call a journey. A lot of my clothes don't quite fit in the same way. So I was like, what am I going to wear? So I looked vaguely respectable and I found this and I went, this is lovely. So David Bowie is my first choice of music.
And is that because it was your first sort of sense of a musical awakening? Because music is nostalgia. So normally we sort of have that kind of first, you know, sense of the first, you know, I was going to say CD, it was tape, album that we bought or the song that we heard that sort of brings us into ourselves or brings us into our own.
Totally. I mean, when I started, it was 45s, the single. I mean, my first single purchase was actually Chic Le Freak, which I do still love. But I was 15 when I heard Rebel Rebel by David Bowie first. And I was at a party in a friend's house and suddenly I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm going to dance. And I started to dance. Well, perhaps throw shapes is the word I should use, but I've always loved dancing and, you know, my getting knocked out in the first round of Dancing with the Stars, notwithstanding, I still love dancing.
Yeah, you're still working through that, aren't you, Kathy?
I know, it's very traumatic.
What could have been, what life could have been? It is Rebel, Rebel. Will we have a quick look?
Oh,
listen.
Yes.
Here we go.
You
What's really interesting about doing this slot is that people start dancing. Whatever music they have picked, they're going back. It's kind of like Lilonium on the dance floor. What's also really interesting is that it was one of your twins who gave you that T-shirt. And is that partly because of Spotify and all of these different apps that they're getting introduced to the music that you loved or we loved when we were younger?
Totally. I mean, I love the idea of eclectic reading and eclectic listening. You know, I mean, I like to think that when my Spotify thing drops, you know, that I'm an interesting person, although Murray listens to way more music than me. But yeah, I think it was very important for me to let my boys see all this different sort of music, hear it, experience it, rather than just saying, let's listen to one sort of music, the music of, you know, 12-year-olds. I was like, yeah, no, you've got to hear jazz from the 30s. Yeah. You've got to hear this amazing, powerful music, you know, Bix, Beiderbecke, all sort of unusual stuff, because that informs you. It's like reading a lot of different books. I think music is like that. It's an amazing world to be discovered.
Tell me about, I know you're talking about your own children, but what were you like as a child? And, you know, that sort of all of those studies on family dynamics. Where in the family did you fall? And does it inform kind of your path in life?
I don't know. I was the middle child, so I'm never entirely sure actually what that means. I just know in my case, I was this sort of, I was sensible. That's the word everyone used about me when I was little. I was very sensible. Nobody wants to be sensible, really, when they're 13. They want to be wild and exotic and very attractive to boys, but that didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So I was, I was very sensible. Older brother, younger sister, and my brother, oh my gosh, he was wildly into both CB radio, which shows you how long ago that is, and the Boomtown Rats. The Rats could do no wrong. I mean, they were just everything. And once we had one of those, radiogram players, sort of circa 1970s hideous things that are very valuable today. And
Yes,
and my mom sold it, and it had our 45-inch single of I Don't Like Mondays on it. I swear to God, I mean, many years later, we're still slightly traumatised by that.
It
was given away.
Were you kind of, you know, because sometimes we do take on the roles and some are the rule breakers, some are the kind of the mediators, you know.
Mediator here, yeah. Totally mediator. I didn't break any rules. I was good as gold. I was so boring. It was, yeah. I don't know if that worked. I read a lot and I lived in my fantasy world and I listened to music. I mean, I was very into The Doors and Tchaikovsky simultaneously, which then makes a lot of sense, you know.
Is eclectic, yeah.
Yes. I love music and I loved books and I loved, don't laugh, embroidery. And I did those things in quite an intense way, yeah.
I know you were saying quite a sensitive child and I know you struggled with your mental health a little bit in your teenage years, but where did that sort of very feisty, independent, feminist Cathy Kelly that we know emerge from, which isn't just in you as a person, but also in a lot of the characters that occupy your books?
That's a brilliant question. I think I was always very aware of the inequalities. And as a teenager, I mean, I was in CND and there was a sort of a political element to me. I remember my father going insane, going, they'll be watching you now. You know, he had a vision of the state as something that keeps an eye on people, which, as we all know, is hilariously daft. But I could tell that women and girls were not given as many chances as men. Women had to do everything. Women had to clean up, you know, do everything. The school I went to, we couldn't do higher level maths or physics until about 2 years before I came to do the senior cycle. And I was outraged about this. This is like saying, you know, you're not able to do those things. And when they came in our school, I did them. Now, I wasn't particularly good at them. And really, physics was an insane choice for someone. I should have done history. So I did physics instead of history.
But you did them because you wanted to prove to yourself that you could.
I know. I wanted to prove that I'm going to do this, which is, I don't know, cutting off your nose to spite your face. But I was always full of this feminist, you know, I'm going to get out there and earn a living. And I've done that my whole life. I mean, I started in journalism when I was 20 and I've never relied on anyone since then for funding.
Yeah, and I want to, just even though, you know, your life in journalism, like, I mean, I don't think perhaps people realise the extent, particularly sometimes women and young women coming into media, it can be a very, very, very tough business.
It was a very, very tough business. I was 20 and despite all the feministiness, I was remarkably innocent in lots of ways. And it was a very male-dominated world. So,
and you went into tabloid journalism.
Into tabloid journalism, yeah, where the news is sexy and anything else isn't sexy. And I was hired with the lovely Paul Williams as a news reporter at the same time, 1980. Well, we were hired in the end of 86 and we started work in 97. And I mean, I was just 20. I mean, Paul was so sort of seasoned and battle-worn. He was 2 years older than me. I mean, I was in Egypt walking around with this sort of lovely facade of, yeah, look at me, I'm tough. I was so not tough. Yeah, to say it was a baptism of fire is putting it mildly.
Do you think the culture has changed for women in media?
I think it has in lots of ways. I think certainly women are getting paid more, but there's an interesting case going on. I think it's just finished in the courts in Northern Ireland about four women journalists, and clearly they were looking for more money. It's slower. You end up with situations where two people are doing the same job and the guy gets more money, you know.
The writing came first, didn't it? And actually this involves sort of the women in your life because I can't believe this. You and your mum, and I don't know if you've still got a copy of it, but together you wrote a Mills and Boone novel.
I know, I never said
or
we
you
finished
attempted.
It. Anna, hello now. I never said we finished it. I mean, we started it. So because I was in journalism college, I had to get a typewriter. This is so long ago. So we bought for 60 quid, I bought this secondhand golf ball. So IBM golf ball, which is possibly impossible to imagine for anyone now, but, you know, look it up. And it's a little round golf ball and that used to whack against the paper and the E was dodgy. And the E is the most used letter in the
most
language.
Of the alphabet, yeah.
So I would go to college and mum would stay home and she'd handwrite. And now both of us have appalling handwriting. We both should have been doctors. So appalling handwriting. And she would, heroine walks into room and then in brackets, describe room. So I was doing all the describey bits. I don't know how two people write books. I actually have no idea. So we didn't get very far. And then my father decided in his own mad figgery that he would also write a Mills and Boone. I don't even think he got very far because he'd never read one. Do you know, I mean, that does help. You have to be able to.
But obviously it was there. The writing gene was there. Family is very important to you and your sister, Lucy. You were kind of a bit of a mom to her because you were slightly older than her. But for you, I mean, that is such a big, big connection. I think it is. It informs your second choice. Tell me a little bit about you and Lucy and growing up.
Oh, my goodness. I was 7 and a half when Lucy was born and I was just so excited. It was like here was this little Baba person. And for the first few years, she was in a different room and then she was in my room. And I think actually she was probably the first person to hear my stories because I would tell her. So we had like two little beds and we'd sit up and I would tell her stories to help her go to sleep. And that was possibly my first, I don't know, storytelling. And I remember.
So your first critic.
My first critic. No, she was not even slightly critical. It was just fabulous. I have this memory of it was sort of like Famous Five, you know, people going off on adventures, frying sausages. That just came to me suddenly. Maybe that was in the stories. But so she was, I mean, she is just a wonderful person. I mean, as my brother Francis, but she and I, we did have this special bond and we lived together for a while. I lived in Cabin Teely and she moved in with me. And we had so much fun. I mean, we'd be driving off to work in the morning and, you know, what we listened to. That was back in the days of tapes. Again, for younger listeners, we should draw a picture of a tape.
But she spooled with a pen or a pencil.
Spooled with a pen.
If it wasn't working.
I still have a few tapes. I mean, you know, gosh, I don't have the yolk to play them on, but it was wonderful.
And it's this song, your second choice, which is Sister Sledge, We Are Family, that reminds you of Lucy and a little bit of sisterhood. Let's have a quick listen.
Love and love.
it's a great track, and it's really interesting because you're actually your latest novel, Sisterhood, is actually out in paperback now. But just even the title, that female friendships or sisters, they're really important themes for you.
They have been in all my books, actually. I remember with my very first book, I wrote about two women who'd been friends since they'd shared a flat in college, and they remained friends. And one of them hilariously had twins, and I knew nothing about having twins at that point. But
Mocking's catching.
I know, isn't it just amazing? But writing about women, women's friends, how we look after each other, that is just so important. And, you know, your friends can be another sort of family. And I think sisterhood also looks at, apart from my beautiful relationship with Lucy, my relationship with all my women friends, but also sisterhood in general. I'm a big fan of women looking after women, women mentoring women and holding each other up. I think that's hugely important because there's a great inequality in the world.
And much needed now. Your next song is an absolute banger. It's a classic, Tina Turner's Proud Mary. Why have you chosen that?
Well, when my children were younger and I'd be driving them to school and back from school, so we were listening to all this music. And at this point, you know, there was no Spotify. So it was, we were slamming, you know, CDs in this ancient yoke. And Proud Mary was one we absolutely loved. I loved Tina Turner and I never got to see her live, sadly. I did get tickets, but I wasn't able to go. But just, as I said, this is part of the whole thing where I was showing them different music and saying, just listen to this now. And we'd all take a go. So, you know, we'd say Murray would go first and Dylan would go second and I'd go next. So it's like your song, your song, your song. And you could get
and you're
songs.
Sharing.
Yeah. You can get three songs in on the way to school, you know. And even though we lived 5 minutes away from school, we were always late. So but we had such fabulous music in the car.
Yeah, and it's funny when you're older, you kind of remember the music of your parents when they were doing that, when they were sharing all of their musical tastes with you. It is a absolute classic. Let's have a listen.
You just want to dance. You want to get up and you want to do that dance that Tina used to do with those.
If only you could dance
legs.
Like Tina and have legs.
Like it's the legs. Oh my God, that woman.
She was stunning. Tell me, you had your sons at 37. You had your twins. And how are you as a family now?
Oh, we're incredibly close. The three of us are just so amazingly close. I mean, Murray is in college and I've in London. I've already been sending him. I've sent him pictures this morning and messages, and he's been messaging back. And I'm talking to him tonight. So we talk a lot. Dylan's in college in Dublin. We're a very close trio. And now we have PJ, my partner, in the mix, and it's lovely. It's really, really, you know, beautiful. But me and the boys, it's just something special, and I feel very privileged to have been able to bring them up, and they're beautiful people. They're amazing people.
Did you feel pressure to have the boys? You were 37. Did you think there was that kind of classic clash between career and family, or did your writing give you that that agility to be able to manage raising the boys?
I mean, I think there's a huge difference between people who are trying to have a career where they're out sort of, you know, 8 to 6, and me. I could have a career and I could still be at home. So that was, you know, that's an enormous privilege. So, no, I really, really wanted children. And I didn't, I think I was working, you know, almost right up to the moment I had them. And then I took 6 months off. But yeah, it was just the most amazing thing. So I went into hospital with three books. Now, one of them was a baby rearing book, but I thought, this would be grand now. You know, it'd be fine. I'm going to do this and be me.
Let them slot into your busy writing life.
Yeah, exactly. Totally transformative. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm very lucky I adapted to it and I loved it. I mean, motherhood is hard. I mean, you know, especially if you're a working mom and you're, you know, relying on trying to get people to mind the kids. And, you know, I didn't go anywhere. I never went anywhere. I didn't have a social life. I was just, it was like children and work. Mm-hmm. And that was great because I think there are those three areas, you know, you can have, they say you can have, you've got children, you've got work and you've got a social life. So you get to have two of those.
Yeah.
So
you can two at any one time, but not all at once.
Yeah.
I did not put you down for your next choice, I got to say, Cathy Kelly, All That Jazz. Oh. I haven't put you into that sort of musicals kind of.
Fosse.
But
Fosse, not Fosse.
But you did do Dancing with the Stars, so maybe it all makes sense.
Well, no, I loved it before. I mean, I'd been asked to do Dancing with the Stars a few times and I just hadn't been able to do it because of work and children and everything. So when it came along, I was like, yes, please. No, as I said, I do love dancing and there is an enormous part of me that wants to be in musical theatre, standing up there, you know, screaming All That Jazz and high kicking my way around the stage. But obviously that needs to be kept in the box. But, you know, All That Jazz, I mean, we would play all sorts of music in the car. You know, we'd be sitting there listening to the, you know, Hall of the Mountain King and at the same time, you know, Chicago. And All That Jazz is this wonderful thing to dance to. It's like you can make yourself your own Bob Fosse. And we used to, Murray and I particularly, do dance-offs in the kitchen with this. We did dance-offs with a few things, but this was one of the best ones, you know.
Well, maybe there might be some people about to do a little dance-off in their kitchens now. This is All That Jazz.
Come on, babe, why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car. I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl. And all that jazz.
Absolutely fantastic. Just Cathy, just on sisterhood, it's really, really interesting as a book, as I now sort of look at where you've come through in the last couple of years. You know, it's about a people pleaser and who has a major life event, which makes them kind of pivot and develop what we in the North would call a bit of thran.
Yeah, fabulous word.
She turns around and I'm just kind of wondering, and I don't want to give anything away about what happens to these three amazing women, but for you as a sort of self-diagnosed people pleaser, what difference has your cancer diagnosis had on the way you work, the way you perceive things and, you know, those fabled life plans that get put?
Oh, yeah, I know. What is that thing? I've written quite a few novels around the theory of, you know, we plan, God laughs. And yeah, so when I was diagnosed, I think I wasn't surprised because I'd been quite pressured for a while. And I do think that, you know, pressure and stress, absolutely and utterly, they affect your immune system. And I'm not setting myself up to be a doctor here, but I think, yeah, they can contribute to health issues. And I had already been diagnosed with chronic fatigue and another autoimmune disorder. So it all sort of began.
That must be anathema to you, someone who is so full of energy and so used to doing everything.
Oh, it's very hard. I mean, I can't stand it. Well, actually, I can't stand it now because I've had to learn. I think the thing is, I was fighting against this, you know, fighting against my body all the time. And then suddenly, when you get a cancer diagnosis and they say, right, let's start with chemo, and you get chemo. There was no fighting this. You are just lying there thinking you might as well be dead already because it was so bad. Okay, that was just my experience. I found chemo very hard. But it's a hugely empowering is almost the wrong word to use, because cancer is not a fun thing on any level, but it changes everything. You go, okay, this is it. You have one go. You want to look after the people you love, be there for them, make, you know, if you have to go, make sure that there's nothing unsaid, and be a very strong person, and stop people pleasing. Because
And how are you now? Because there's quite a bit of energy about you.
There's this huge energy about me. I know. It's weird. I think the energy is coming back, which is fantastic, along with the hair, which is quite insane. But anyway, we won't go there.
I think it looks great.
I know, it's a bit mad. When I wake up in the morning, it all stands up straight on top of my head, and I do look deranged. So, you know,
and also women of a certain age start to worry less about things, and there's something very liberating about that.
It is, totally. I mean, my favourite shoes are those purple clogs you get to wear in the garden, and I will quite happily go out in them. I don't care anymore. Standards are slipping. But also, it's not that I don't care. Of course, we all care about important people, what they think. But at the end of the day, people will have an opinion one way or the other. And that's grand.
And it's all about perspective in any event. Your final choice is, again, something just going back to your 20s. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this particular song, I remember when it came out, and I used to just absolutely adore it, and I would play it. I had this habit: if I had a CD or a record, I would just play it over and over and over and over and over again. I was not one of those people who listened to the whole album and went, that's great. No, there would be one song I would listen to endlessly, and that would be the one that would get scratched. So this reminds me of that time, and it was very freeing. I think going through cancer and my children growing up and getting divorced and being about to move house, which is, oh my God, frightening. But you come back partly to the person you were a long time ago, but you're different and you're more mature and you can see things differently. And it's completely lovely. And the book I'm writing at the moment actually has a lot of that in it. Not about someone who is my age, but younger people. But it's about getting that wisdom earlier. If only we'd had all
the wisdom
earlier. If
only we had that earlier in life, wouldn't we all be better off? Just to say that Sisterhood, the paperback version, is available in all good bookshops now. And Cathy Kelly, we will look forward to your new book coming out that you've just teased for us. But for now, we are going to play Radio Ma, or the Portishead, which is Glory Box, your song you've chosen.
Thank you.